Hi. In this podcast, we are going to be looking at finances and church and leadership and what a minefield this can be, and yet what an opportunity for God's grace to flow even in the nuts and bolts of working out how a church works. And in the room with me today, I've got two seasoned leaders who have been in the finance teams of Common Ground for over 12 years. Is that right? So I'm going to ask you guys to introduce yourself, and then we'll dive right in.
So I'm Ryan, and I've played kind of different roles through the Common Ground story, but mainly from a leadership point of view and a catalyst of our kind of staff oversight and growth into different areas of ministry and things like that, but have served very much within a kind of operational leadership type role. And out of Alan myself, I'm the one that's really good at spending the money. Alan's a bit better at saving it.
What a team.
But tell us about yourself, Alan.
Great. Hi, everyone. Yeah, my name's Alan, and I've been in this journey from 2007, and I'm what we call a marketplace elder. So I've got work 4 days a week in the market and 1 day a week here at Common Ground, and it's been awesome. And, you know, my background is, like Ryan's saying, is to figure out ways in which we can make the money go as far as we can and last as long as we can. And so been really helpful, hopefully, in the process of just building in financial systems that are helping us achieve our goals and our vision and our strategies, and also a little bit on the payroll and HR side as well. So it's been a great journey, and trying to keep up with the guys that are here full day has been quite a fun journey.
Wonderful. What is so great about Common Ground is it has grown over these 12 years that both of you have been involved in this specific side of Common Ground, from one congregation to many. So there's so many different aspects we could dive into looking. I'm thinking about most of the people listening will probably be church leaders with a smaller, kind of simpler model. And if you guys can cast your kind of mind's eye back over the 12 years you've been involved, what are some of the guiding principles regarding finances and stewarding finances in a church that you would say are have been key in our story, but that you would love to pass on to others that are perhaps a little bit behind us in the journey?
Great. Yeah, thanks, Julie. So the first thing is we saw that you know, there's always more vision than there is provision. You know, when you're in a context where you live for the long-term future and for eternity, like mindset, you've always know what the next thing would be to do. And it's really just trusting God and waiting for those finances to come in a lot of the time. And so the first thing we did was we felt there was a lot of noise in the monthly income where it goes up and down based on the rhythm of calendars. But we found that the first principle that really helped us get some stability in our planning was looking at a four-month average. And that we felt really brought some stability towards our planning. So that'd be the first thing off the top of my head.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, I think also along with that four-month average, that smooths kind of an understanding of what's coming in. It smooths that out over the 4 months, gives you a more realistic understanding.
So just to drill down on that, by four-month average, you mean we don't make any big decisions based on 1 month's kind of finances?
Well, it's even to the degree of saying, so what is coming in, and depending on when month end falls and if it's over a weekend and things like that, you can see substantial kind of differences in the money that's coming in. And so that can make you feel like, oh wow, we had a brilliant January, but we had a terrible February. And then you actually realize, no, it was a shorter month, and you know, and actually it's less calendar based. And so kind of taking the 4 month average allows us to say we roughly are getting this in, and we wouldn't then make any decisions going forward that we don't feel like are you know, represented in the capacity that we've seen established over at least the last 4 months. So sometimes you have a great month and then you think, ah, this is our new normal. It's very seldomly our new normal. We kind of just had a great month, but looking back over 4 months gives you the ability to kind of wisely look forward and make decisions.
Cool. And then just for the detail guys out there, what we mean by that is, like, if we're looking in the May month, we're comparing it to Jan to April. And if you're looking in obviously June, then it's obviously Feb to May. Yeah. And the other thing I think, Raya, I don't know if you'd agree, but the other item that's been really helpful is if we looked at the giving, we took out some of the bigger numbers. And so we've decided on a rand value above which we actually isolate that away from like looking at the rhythm of the 4 months, because sometimes a large gift can give you a 4 month average that looks amazing, and then in month five you're like, oh, what happened? So we've actually started like putting those more to one side and making a different set of decisions off the back of those items.
Great.
And that amount, or kind of where you would cap that, is kind of going, it feels like regular committed giving, which is our way of speaking about to the value of tithe, you know, and the understanding, biblical understanding of that. We feel like regular committed giving is more an appropriate term, but we kind of feel like, wow, this amount of money that came in as a once-off kind of deposit into our account is outside of the usual regular committed giving. And so each church would need to figure out what is outside of the usual. So it's most probably someone who has got an injection of money from something, not as a regular run rate experience in their life. And so that just helps us to go, this is what we can count on. And these extra kind of lump sums or bigger amounts, they most probably going to be boosters to what we can do rather than create a run rate for our spending. Yeah.
Great. Any other guiding principles?
Yeah, I'd love to jump in straight away and say, especially from a marketplace lens, you know, you would never ask someone in the market to come and work for less than fair pay. But we seem to have this mindset that when you go to work for God in the church, that you should be having an additional set of convictions around being willing to live on way less than what's fair. And so obviously there are unique seasons, like when you're launching your church, there might be a few of you who have actually saved towards it, and you can live for a season while you're building up a regular committed giving or income as a church. But I think as soon as humanly possible, my proposal is that as a church, you move towards a pay grading system where you're getting some market research and you're trying to find out what a fair pay role would be, and then that you actually move your team. It's a lot easier to do when you've got 3 staff than when you've got 300 staff. So like the earlier you can get towards fair pay, the better. And off the back of that, that straight away sets expectation around what's possible in terms of employing people onto staff. And I think that when you do that and you raise the value of the employee at a pay level, then straight away you can start recruiting and at the right level as well. And it raises the conviction of the members of the community as well, if they know that people are being employed fairly. Yes. I think that would be a big win, huh?
Yeah, and I think our journey over the many years of kind of employing staff, 22 years into our journey, we've had numbers of iterations. And if I had to go back to the beginning, one of the values or the principles would be is that we don't set our own salaries.
Yeah.
And I think right from the beginning, to include one or two members of the community who you feel like are wise and experienced in this, and most probably even some other church voices that your church links into, and maybe even some specialists in the market. I think many churches don't think that way when they're small, but Alan's point here is set it up from the beginning, and then you live in the wisdom of that. And obviously for every church there's opportunity cost, and it's like, should we plant the church or shouldn't we? We've got a guy that's willing, we can't pay him fully, so obviously there's sacrifices involved. But the sooner you can get to a place of establishing some people who can help set the salaries and can do that according to what now is pretty readily available, some good market research. And then people always ask the question, and so what market are you relating to when you're paying salaries? And I think more and more there's brilliant resources out there with regards to, you know, nonprofit organizations, people who are existing for the well-being of others in the city, you know, those kinds of things. And then trying to pitch a sense of, where's our church at? You know, if we're in a very resource poor area, for us to have been saying we're going to pay on the higher Manhattan side of what NGO leaders get. That's most probably not right. Well, at the same time, if you're in a more affluent area and you're just saying, hey, this is what an NGO worker gets, but the beauty is that there's some really good scales out there these days. There's some brilliant market kind of research that most of the people who deal with this regularly can just help the church with. And I love the idea of being able to regularly stand before our people saying, we don't set our salaries, here's who we've got to help do this. And it brings integrity and transparency to that.
Yeah, fantastic. I think you've both touched on it, and I don't know if you even meant to or you noticed that you had, but you've spoken about the vitalness of team when it comes to finances and organizing the finances of a church. Just talk to us a little bit about that. Who is on a team? Is it a rotating team? How specifically speaking about to other church leaders who might be in a similar kind of place?
So I definitely think you need vision carriers in the room. Mm-hmm. I think vision carriers will often bring faith to the moment, and they'll bring the kind of backstory of why we really feel like this is something we need to move towards, or this is something we trust in God for. But then I think you also need some financial experts in the room, people who just are well-versed and looking at where you're at and kind of getting a sense for where the risks are, how we can structure this thing for optimization and getting the best out of. I think where Alan has been great is that Alan is a faith guy while also being a financial specialist. So it's not like he's saying, oh no, we can't do it. We're looking at how can we do it in without compromising some of the stewardship and wisdom dynamics. We don't want to say a big yes this month and then we can't pay salaries next month. So in that kind of way, I think putting a team around you of some of the leaders who are really carrying the vision and then some experts and specialists who can actually test some of the validity of decisions being made and systems and structures being put in place.
Great.
Yeah, I think the only thing to add there is there's always been a helpful mix in having guys who are employed by the church and then having some representation of people not employed in the church to bring some perspective through their lenses, which again just helps us raise our conviction levels of why we're not trying to replicate everything that a business would be doing. And there are some subtleties unique to a church, and yet there's so much we can learn from just general good financial wisdom in organizational lens thinking. So it just keeps us current with what's happening out there, and then we're able to go, well, that's unique for the marketplace, unique to us is this one thing. For example, the ratio of salaries to income would be probably higher in our context than a traditional business, because we don't sell products or anything. We actually connect people, you know, and it's a people to people journey, and so we would have a higher staff complement than an average organization out there if you look at just a general market.
Maybe one also thing to add to that, sorry, that I just forgot, is around in the makeup of that team, I think, and oftentimes your pastors, your key leaders bring this to it, but people that are also can help interpret biblical principles out of the Bible into the 21st century and kind of say, what does it mean for us to remember the poor? What does it mean for us to look after our own first? What does it mean for us to be sowers? What does it mean for us to have both bread and seed? Seed for sowing, bread for eating. How do we take some of those biblical principles and not just apply it to households, you know, family households, but also the household of the Lord, our local congregation, our church. So I think that key ingredient of making sure you've got some of the biblical leaders that can help us, while the financial specialists and the visionaries carry those things too.
Yeah, that's been really exciting. I think seeing things through the lens of scripture and what the early church was doing, etc., we were able to see like, wow, this is a key value. And it's the kind of thing that if you don't, again, budget for it, to plan for it, there isn't money for it. So I remember a few times in our season where we made, as that particular team made some specific decisions around how we remember the poor, how we go to neighbors and nations, how we spread the word greater than just our local city, and being willing to then say, wow, guys, if we're going to do this and we're going to put this amount of income away every month for that, that means no to these things we want to do right now. We'll trust God to provide for that anyway into the future. future, but we've got to say the bigger yes to what we see in Scripture. That was that's been really cool, and quite a lot like revelationary paradigm shifting stuff. It's been really cool
compared to a normal kind of business. Hey?
Yeah, shareholder value. What's the shareholder value?
So, just veering into that slightly for a minute, it feels like. Like we've been quite wise stewards, you know, and quite prudent in financial planning as a church. And yet I feel like God has honored that with also just some incredible faith stories of his provision that's been, in a sense, miraculous at times. Talk to us about that. Are there any just testimonies of God's kind of wild provision when we really needed it, or where there has been a gap, and I'm aware that we don't live in that. We don't live in the faith gap. We live in wisdom. But I feel like it's important to just note that God has sometimes surprised us.
Yeah, I love how the Bible creates room for the spectrum of people that are contributing to kingdom and local church. You've got the widow's mite, you know, and you kind of picture this older kind of lady who is just sowing her last few coins, and you know she gets celebrated and highlights it as, wow, look at her faithfulness, celebrate her generosity. So you have all the way from those with the pennies through to your Romans 12 gift of giving and the call to do so generously, you know, and you've got the whole spectrum. The Bible, you know, to whom much is given is much required. There's an element of the breadth of Scripture recognizing who's amongst us, and I think maybe just an example from our most recent giving day, we looked across the year and the numbers of givers that were giving kind of the small portions. There was a lot more of them, but their contribution to our overall vision was equal to that of the big givers. Wow. So you had a handful of really big givers who were being very faithful, and they have often been catalytic in exercising their gift of giving generously, particularly in moments of faith and where God's called us to do something that's outside of the regular kind of this is what we do, you know, business as usual, run rate stuff.
Yeah.
Often those gifts have been catalytic, just like a leader would be catalytic and calling people somewhere. Those guys have been catalytic, empowering us to actually go there. But it's also great just to see that, you know, everybody gets to play a part. Yeah. And so I love that, the breadth of Scripture and how it makes room for all of us. We all celebrate in the Bible, you know. Yeah. So there are definitely some stories over the years where we've seen God blessing local businesses in a way that's allowed guys. I remember in the development of our kind of property, it would have been impossible for us to extend our main campus venue to seat more people if it wasn't for the fact that the house next door was owned by someone else and we wouldn't have got permission. And when that house became available, we as the church knew there was a moment in time, if we didn't get this, all future kind of development plans of the property were going to be put on hold and most probably restricted. And two businessmen found out about the quandary we were in and came forward and said, we'll take care of this. And such a beautiful story of just people recognizing this is an opportunity for them to exercise their gift and, you know, open something up. We didn't even recognize back then how vital that was going to be to the future story of what was what God was going to do through us. So,
I think what I love about that is it's not like we had to be wild and reckless and then God had to kind of mop up after us. We were stewarding as best as we can. And then every now and then it feels like God breaks in with some wonderful extra provision, which I just love about God. So now we're moving from one congregation to multi-site, and at present there are 10 Common Ground congregations, and I imagine that adds a certain level of complexity to the way that we organize our finances. Can you talk to us a bit about that?
Yeah, sure. I think I'll share some of the learnings as well as we went along. So I think when you go to multi-site, I think one of the bigger decisions at the very beginning is to decide what is going to be unique to the frontier, to each of the congregations or churches. and what are you going to try and provide from a shared service kind of environment? And so there are a few things that straight away we banked from the very beginning and has continued to be banked, and that would be overall leadership of the collective, the united journey, and so a lot of those salaries would have been paid from the shared story. And then the things that didn't make unique benefit by being done within the local congregations as well, for example, finances and like just HR, like HR staff, and that we felt we could leverage having those team members sitting together. And so so we have like a centralized shared services kind of environment there. And then there are certain ministry items, and maybe Ryan could speak a bit more to that, is that some of those ministry items, it's great to have a really senior person sitting kind of being resourced out of the shared service environment, because then you can increase the quality of that particular ministry right at launch date of your congregation. So that's been a good learning. And then over time, we've realized some of the roles we put in the shared services, that as soon as a congregation got to a certain size, they were better served by employing a local person. And so that journey for us, as a result of that, as over time, shifted the way we think about funding the shared service team and obviously funding in the frontiers. So we've kind of had a bit of a journey of some of the money goes towards shared services and some of the money goes towards congregations. And then what Ryan was touching on earlier, the chunk of the finances goes towards, you know, remembering the poor and advancing the gospel in other contexts. But Ryan, maybe you can touch a little bit around that.
Yeah, I think it is most probably worth kind of just stating, maybe even at one location, there are already some biblical, I think, encouragements for looking at our finances. And if we say, hey, this is 100% of what we have, how do we steward that really well? And we feel like there's a contextual read. So we feel like kind of most churches, as soon as they're established and kind of able, should be looking to give 10% towards gospel advance outside of their local community. So the strengthening of other churches and other stories and gospel mission in their country and the world. And so 10% to gospel advance. We feel contextually, and we feel like most churches should lean into this to a degree, but because of the South African story and narrative, and because we live in a predominantly privileged kind of community and communities, we feel like 10% to remembering the poor is where we wanting to see our established churches living. So right off the top, knowing that we're giving 20% away, for us, left us with an 80%. What does it look like for us to finance mission locally? And then there's even some wisdoms, and I think to apply to that, there's in different contexts, again, this can differ. I know in the States it's maybe a little bit more conservative. Here it feels a little bit more frontier living. And so we would say up to about 60% of the overall 100 we would feel comfortable in deploying towards staffing and what's happening. And the other then 20, and sometimes it's a little bit more, is towards actual ministry expenses and venues, facilities, what we're doing in the different age group ministries, things like that. And all that taking into consideration that hopefully we would have some kind of stewardship reserve, that doesn't mean that we're completely living hand to mouth, month to month, but there are reserves. And again, I think here we've applied the wisdom of always having a full month's reserve, you know, on hand. We want to make sure that's always there. And we feel like the chances of us going from 100% income to zero is unlikely. I know that in many other contexts, the wisdom of trying to have as much as 2 or 3 months reserve is applied. So I think the local church needs to figure out what's going to look like wise stewardship to you. And then as you move into the multi-site journey, of course, you've got to realize that a brand new church plant is most probably not at capacity to give 10% to gospel advance, 10% to remembering the poor. So we've kind of started all our congregations at 5% to gospel advance and 5% to remember the poor. Outside of their first 2 years of being planted. So once they're beyond the 2-year mark, we want to just see them living in 5 and 5. So they're giving away 10%. And then we've had multiple iterations of seeing the remaining percentage kind of leaning from. At one point, it was 50-50 between the local church and what we call shared services. And now over time, it's getting more to trying to be somewhere around the 20% mark to shared services. And so after their 10%, hopefully growing to 20, plus 20%-ish is what we're aiming towards to shared services, they remaining with 60% or 70%, which they locally are using to steward their mission. So those kinds of things, I think the one thing I would say is that when you're in a story that's growing and changing, you've got to recognize that finances is a servant to vision. And so it's continually going to be, you know, shifting and changing so that you're regularly giving more to where it's most needed. And so those percentages are great to have because they create some structure for spending and budgeting, while at the same time they will continue to be a shifting structure.
Great, great.
Yeah, just to add to what Ryan said there, I think what we've learned and those percentages have been the really big rock items that we wanted to put in first into our planning. But any context in any environment over a season, there's going to be something specifically you're trusting God to do within your space. It could be a new venue, it could be a new ministry, etc. And
any staff person.
Staff person. So what we try and do is say, when you're moving towards that, we call it specified funding. So we're going like, if once you set your heart onto something and you feel God's behind it, actually ring fence that specifically and start giving towards that. Because again, if you don't do that intentionally, you end up being able to spend that for other urgent items. Maybe we're in the month where the giving does go down, but to say, hey, we believe we've heard from God, we're putting it in there, and then we're not going to be able to take it out for general use. Obviously, it's not an electric fence, but we do our absolute best to try and prioritize the next season that we feel God's calling us into, so we don't eat away that seed, as Ryan was referring to earlier.
Great. And then kind of the final chapter is the people. We've spoken about guiding principles and kind of some percentages that are guiding principles regarding multi-site. At the end of all of this, you've said that finances serve the vision. And I think also we are, as a church, here to serve the people. And so how do we serve people best when it comes to finances, discipling them, also remaining transparent in a way that's helpful, and I suppose discipling them towards generosity and trust?
Yeah, I think it is one of those things that is a leadership journey for any leader within the church. I totally recognize that. One of the things that I realized quite quickly is that in leading people, you've got to recognize that this is a key area of discipleship. And often it's, I say to our people, it kind of feels like we worship with all of who we are and our wallets worship last. Mm-hmm. And there's a component of just looking to Jesus and going, wow, this guy seemed to talk about resource and finance and a heart and how that's linked to our finances and things like that. Mm-hmm. He spoke about it a whole lot. I most probably need to get a bit more comfortable in discipling and leading our people.
And have you found that, Ryan, as a congregational leader, have you felt like you've grown in your confidence of discipling people?
Oh, definitely. I think, you know, the people could see my knees knocking in the first couple of times that I was speaking about finance in front of the church. The church has got it so wrong in so many different ways the world over. And so for us to be able to actually say, you know, we're not going to, you know, the answer to misuse is not no use, it's correct use. And we're not going to not speak about finances because of that. And we feel like there's a number of people that we're trying to reach and their perception of the church is that they're after money. And so there's a number of reasons why church leaders can be inclined not to speak about it. But I do believe that if we're wanting to honor God and we're wanting to love our people, then we need to disciple them into the fullness of what Jesus disciples our hearts in. And so I think regularly teaching into these things. So we must probably have at least one clear teaching in this direction, either a sermon or a sermon series per year that really addresses it. And then we'll most probably bring it up as a point in a sermon at least 3, 4, maybe even 5, 6 times in the year, just because we feel like Jesus spoke about it so much, and just because it feels like that's actually where the tacky hits the tar for so many people in other key areas of discipleship. But man, there's a great example of, is that working as it should or isn't it? So I think that's the first thing, is get comfortable in your Sunday sermons, in your Sunday meetings, in the way you take up your offerings, to you know, to know that you're loving and discipling people.
Wonderful.
Just to say, one of the things we realized is that to be able to speak on that in the context of a Sunday or through teaching, we needed to kind of know how many of our people were giving. So that sometimes you can, the rand or dollar value of your giving is misleading to the number of people are giving, because you could have a few very generous people. And so what we do is, in our context of South Africa, it's not common to be looking at individuals' names in their contribute. I know in other countries, for some places that happens, but we look at the number of EFTs, which is the electronic funds that get deposited into our accounts. And we look at the relationship between that and our active Sunday attendance slash membership. And that gives an understanding of how many families or individuals are giving towards the story. And I think, again, Ryan mentioned right up front, is that widow's mite. We really see Jesus honoring the giver in the act of giving. And so the rand value side obviously makes is important when you add them all up together in what we're able to do. But every individual's journey in giving to God, we've got kids in our kids ministry who give on a monthly basis via EFT, you know. Like, it's really cool to see right through to people way past retirement and that. So we're just seeing, you know, multi-generational giving towards underwriting what God's doing in and through us. So it's really cool. And that gives us data points to talk about.
Wonderful. Yeah, and I think then it becomes important. So you're confident in front of your people because you're loving them, you're discipling them, you're trying to lead them into the fullness of what Christ has for them. But then through offering moments, particularly on Sundays, trying to link that giving not just to bills paid, but to vision that we're able to live in.
That's
a vital thing. And so we have got this right at times, not always, but trying to link those offering moments to saying, guys, why we do this is because we believe it's biblical, it's a good principle, and we're all participating in the family. But also, look how this is going to change this life. Look how this allows us to do this.
Yeah.
So that's beautiful in inspiring our people, I guess, and informing them.
And I think in underwriting that finances serve vision and mission.
Totally, yeah. And even the bills are part of the vision and the mission. And we get to collectively, you know, count the cost of paying them together. And then I think it is important, another element of leading our people is understanding the difference between what is the usual kind of, you know, ministry expenses and what we're doing, and how do we spend the money, and giving them feedback. So we have an annual review where we financially give feedback to all of our people around, this is what's come in, this is how it's kind of been spent and towards different things, this is how we set our salaries for our staff and our pastors and things like that, and just try and be as transparent as we can. I think the churches, like I said earlier, misuse so many elements of church finance that I think it's good for us to be transparent in that. And then also have moments where we call people to radical moments of generosity over and above. And our annual vision day has become that day for us, where we roughly see about 10% of our annual budget being brought in on a vision day, but largely, almost completely actually, it's not towards what we're already doing. It's towards us being a blessing, sending, strengthening church in the city and world. And we find that people almost give out of two different wallets in that regard. It's like, hey, this is my regular faithfulness, and this is actually me being generous over and above that towards this thing that God's doing. So I think every church needs to figure that out for themselves.
Yeah. I think one guiding principle that I've picked up, though, is not not to have those kind of giving days or fundraising days too often in a year.
Yeah, definitely. We there was one year where we considered doing a second one just because they were two major things we felt like God had put on our hearts. And we actually realized, right, kind of towards moving to the second one that it wasn't going to be the right time for us to do that. And I think that comes down to contextual read of your people, where they're at, you know, those kinds of things. I think many churches would be able to do more than one, but I think often it's got to do with the leadership and their approach. It's also got to do with the read of, you know, the economy and the people and where they're at. And we just didn't feel like it was going to be the right squeeze on our people.
Great.
Any
last thoughts, Alan?
Yeah, I think I would just very quickly say, you would have heard us mention the word budget a few times through this podcast, and the role of the budget is to help you understand what you're aiming to do in light of what you believe God's going to provide. And so we set it in motion, but you can't spend budget, you can only spend actual. So we've found a few midstream corrections when the years haven't gone as planned, and you got to have an idea of what you're wanting to do. But I think being the finance guy, I think we went from an oversimplified model to an overcomplicated model. And yeah, I got really excited 1 or 2 years, and the ministry guys were going like, help, help, because I was really like, it was overkill. And we really feel that we've come back down to a rhythm where the budget holders of the ministries feel empowered, that they're writing down their dreams for the ministries that they're leading, and there's an adequate financial team who can translate that into accounting speak. And so we focus the budget cycle around what we're doing, not trying to make it easy for the accountants. The accountants can work a little bit harder in the background, but it's been a really good exercise for us, because you're actually writing down what you're trusting God for. It's more than just rands and cents.
Wonderful.
So it's really cool.
And where your treasure is, your heart is also. Hey,
absolutely.
So,
yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And I think also, as you can hear, the fact that there is a finance team and accounting team on the back end, we're living in the privilege of size, and with that, we can experience complexity. And maybe one of the other little lessons that I can remember us learning was out of a heart for wanting to build and bless and release, and the one thing that is dangerous to do is to structurally shift to loose too quickly. So we have regularly just needed to call ourselves back to a tight to loose model, because as soon as you loosen up in an area, you empower in that area, that becomes standard expectation. And it's really hard then to say, hey guys, actually we're going to need to cut that budget, or we're going to need to pull that back. So I think being able to keep tighter and then be able to bless over and above that, rather than change your structures in a building kind of way and then realize, oh man, we've got to call it back, you know. And we've had 1 or 2 iterations of needing to call it back, and those are way harder than the great moments of going, guys, actually we've done well, we've stewed a little extra, how could this boost your ministry if we gave you this little bit of extra? So I think in those kinds of ways, those are lessons learned, and they would apply to the individual church or multi-site kind of journey.
Well, thank you, Ryan, and thank you, Alan, and thank you for your faithful stewardship in this area of Common Ground. We hope that it's been helpful for you, if you're a church leader in a similar context, or maybe not very similar, just an injunction to be faithful with what God has given you, and also to have faith that He wants to provide even more. Thank you.